bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, that's me.
Gentlemen, here's a conversation that I think might be interesting to have, and also probably some of our listeners might be curious to talk about. We all were involved, are involved to some degree in making, we make a living through making content. We make things that other people, yes, you know, and largely, you know, Scam Stuff sells physical stuff, but I would say that for most of, I think for all of us, the lion's share of what we do is we take things in our heads, or we take things from other people's heads, we merge them together, and then we deliver them in some sort of format. And sometimes it's ad supported. Sometimes it's supported by people paying us through Patreon. Sometimes it's people paying for us doing things directly. What would you say to, you know, a clever, you know, 20-year-old today? You meet a 20-year-old who's filled with, hey, I want to do this. I could do this. I could do that. What path would I take? You know, what path should I follow? Should I create? And I think that these could be 20-year-old versions of ourselves. To say, for example, and to say, okay, if I met you now, what would I tell you to do? And I'll give you an example as, let's say, myself. If I met a 20-year-old version of me, I'd already been doing like cruise ships for a year. And so I've come off doing cruise ships, and maybe I'm like, I like it, but I don't really like it. But I like, at that point, I still like magic. And I, you know, and you wouldn't be able to, I would tell you how much I love science and technology, but I wouldn't have had the discipline at that point to sit down to learn, you know, programming beyond, you know, the stuff I knew when I was a kid, you know. So I would want to do something in content. I would have wanted to do something in magic. And maybe I would still want to be a performer. 20-year-old version of me was probably really still set on, I want to be a performer. And then it would be, how would I do that in this world? And, you know, first step is I'd say, go look at what everybody's doing who wants to do that. Then look at what's really working. By working, making a living doing that. There are a lot of magicians on YouTube who are performing and doing stuff, but none of them are making money. You know, I've known magicians who were having YouTube channels with lots of views and stuff, but that wasn't enough. And often people have that attitude, like, oh, I'll do these Instagram videos. I'll do these 10-second videos and do really cool stuff. Like, oh, I've got, you know, kind of, you know, I've got 100,000 people following or whatever. Like, cool. But where are you in 10 years? And that's a big thing that I don't think, you know, a lot of younger content creators don't think about. It might be because everything changes so fast, it's hard to have answers, but career building is problematic. But I guess, you know, my goal to myself, like, I would tell myself, like, figure out where the money is and go to there. And that might be, you know, being a channel or distributor and not just this talent.
I have thoughts on this, but before I share them, I would love to hear Justin's take.
You know, the biggest thing that I would say to somebody who is 20 or myself at 20, if I'm in the modern world, is, you know, and this might be age or it might be true, the world is a lot more, the content world is a lot more settled than it was when I was 20. So a lot of the thoughts that I had that in the moment seemed revolutionary, like, I don't want to get a job at a newspaper because I think that that's a bad system for me to spend prime years doing. I want to start doing independent content, and I want to make sure that I build my own audience, and they are, you know, they know that I'm the one who's doing it and I'm not part of a larger machine. Those were scary because you didn't know. The only thing that I would say is that there was probably room in the middle. There was room while I was in New York to get involved in some of the emerging, like, blog companies and stuff like that. And I probably would have gotten a little bit more into some of the systems and made connections that kind of could have taken things even faster than what I did. But in general, the biggest lesson that I would say is, you know, at the end of the day, you have to follow what you want to do, or else you're going to kind of constantly be rebooting. Like, you, and if you don't like your content, if you don't like your journey, if you don't like your challenges, then you're not going to get the most fulfilling and rewarding elements of what an independent content creator's life would be. At least that's in my opinion.
And I wanted to add on it too. And I guess that's kind of like to figure out how to, what the advice to give. Like in the chat room, I brought up Magic and somebody said, oh, going on AGT or fool us if that's your aim. I've been in Magic my entire life. And if I were telling a 20-year-old version of me, that'd be the last thing I'd tell you to do. I'd say stay as far away from there as possible because, you know, if you want to do it for fun, that's cool. But if you're a young 20-year-old looking to build a career, worst use of your time and effort, particularly AGT, worst use of your time and effort to do that, because nobody remembers who placed 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and you're no longer special. And there's you're all of a sudden you're saying, I'm going to compete in the same marathon everybody else is competing. And I think when it comes to anything, you need to carve out that niche that is you and it's different, because otherwise immediately you get lumped in with everything else.
Yeah.
And we can get into kind of more detail about that.
Yeah, I might disagree with you on that, because what you do get when you go on Fool Us or America's Got Talent is you get essentially 30 minutes of studio rental time of a top tier production. And that means that from that day forward, your sizzle reel, your pitch reel will always instantly, within 3 seconds of looking at it, anybody who's there to book the Christmas banquet or the Halloween special or whatever will instantly know, well, at least I know this guy's not a total joker and I'm not going to be made to look at
this. You can get that in so many other ways without your sizzle reel looking like every other performer's sizzle reel now. That's my issue. It's like everybody tries to get on there, goes on there. You type in YouTube and every magician's, and I'm saying like, there are better ways. And you're immediately putting yourself in that category with those. And then now you're going to be competing for gigs with the guy who won AGT or the magician that placed higher. And a lot of the most innovative talent in Magic never goes very far in AGT because they want a very simple, they want a very sort of thing. And so again, this is the difference of, you've got a guy, Brian, who's built an empire related to entertainment and teaching people and Magic and relating that. And I've got a very different approach to it too. So I'm saying like, there ain't no one right path. And you know, my goal was I wanted to get on TV. And when my first TV series, if I'd been on AGT, I wouldn't have gotten it. Because they'd be like, oh, you already been on here. You've been played out. You've done this. You know? And when I went to Discovery Channel, if they're like, oh, you're still doing stuff. We saw you on this other CW show kind of thing. It wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have taken me seriously.
Right.
And you know, David Copperfield, and like I said, just let me finish. David Copperfield, like Doug Henning, you know, Penn and Teller, never did competitions. They never put themselves in a situation where they were compared to other people.
Yes. Also, on the flip side of that, we live in an age where nobody sees the whole program. So what they see is the 5-minute curated best of reel for everyone. And so if what you want to do is tell a story of for me, the thinking was, hey, you are looking to hire somebody for your freshman orientation. What you want to know is this guy going to make me look bad? Is this guy going to be a joker? Let me show you 7 clips in rapid succession that are instant proof that, well, at the very least, this guy's made it around and did. And yeah, they were low tier, mid daytime shows like, you know, Jenny Jones or Ricky Lake or, you know, a couple of Tonight Show appearances and all that. But in 3 minutes, you could look and say, I know for a fact that I will not be made a sucker by this person
I'm not going to be embarrassed.
Exactly.
This is a decision that will pay off for me. Yeah.
Right.
If your goal is to be a mid-level college performer, 100%, you know, but like the example we're getting here, like, oh, it worked for Matt Franco and Shin Lim. And yes. And my point was, for the amount of effort you put in there, the thousands of magicians and the hundreds of really highly talented people there, you know, what a Shin Lim and Matt Franco both have in common. Guys extremely talented.
Yes. That's the an identical sizzle reel. That's what they have in common.
They're young and good looking. They're young and they fit a model that like, and Piff had a great character for being a Piff.
Yeah, I think to me, the lesson is if the person who's made the most of both those shows and even Fool Us in the British version was Piff, and he did that because his character was ready for big airtime. Like, he had such a great character and he maximized that airtime. That was just oxygen for a fire that has continued to kind of continue to grow. But like, I don't know. And I don't want to get into like personal, like, you know, different acts or whatever, but I do think that Andrew's like larger meta point of like, hey, look, if you want to be the biggest, and that's something that probably went unsaid in your initial, like speaking to your former self, Andrew, is that you had, you know, if you wanted to be a performer, you wanted to be David Copperfield level. You wanted to be Penn and Teller level. You wanted to be Steve Martin level. And the question then becomes, okay, well, how do you get there? What's the best way to use, what are the best avenues to chase down so you are at that like cut above level in a way that AGT is a lot of same, not only for magic, but for singing and acrobatics and escape artistry and everything else.
And the challenge with AGT can be, you can be a guy that innovated, created a new trick, created a thing like this. And if somebody went on there 3 seasons ago and did a version of what you created, 3 seasons later, you come in there, they don't give you any credit for that. They call you an imitator. And that's one of the things I saw happen too, is some of the people who went really far on that show were some of the biggest copycats of, but they were young. They're really young and good looking people. And that's who the judges want to go forward because they know who watches. And that's a thing where it was frustrating, like behind the scenes talking, oh, I'm going to go do the show. I'm going to go do this. And you're kind of like, you kill it in everywhere you go, but this show is going to put forth a certain kind of person and not another. And also, if they had a guy last year who did the same sort of thing, they ain't going to let a guy this year do that.
Would you consider it a fair way to restate it as, if you grab the brass ring of America's Got Talent or Fool Us, then you almost certainly don't get to grab the gold ring of a season of your own show. Not in that order, because I did it in reverse order. Like I had a show and decided to, I don't know, yeah, I'll do Penn and Teller's Fool Us.
Yeah, I don't know, but I guess part of the thing that I get in, things may be different and stuff, but I would say that what I do know is that when you look at the amount of time and money that people spend, magicians in particular, try to spend to try to get into those third and fourth, those rounds, it's like we would get, just like we get these calls all the time, like, second round. And like, and I used all my great stuff to get past the audition stage. What do I do? I've got $15,000 on my credit card that I can spend. I need something fast. And that's hard about magic. It's not like music where you can learn a new song and you can just pick stuff up. And I'm saying, if you're a musician, I'd say it'd be different. I'd say like, oh, if you can make it pretty far in AGT, I don't think it's, other than the fact the contract's going to be onerous, whatever, but like, that's a different thing, because if they don't pick you up, you pick up, start a SoundCloud account and keep creating cool stuff. People don't care, you know?
What? So maybe, to back away a little bit, the big message is know what you want out of whatever it is you're doing.
What end?
Like a bunch of people tell me, I want a Hollywood agent. And I said, why? And he said, well, because then he could get me the big gigs. And it's like, and then I say, why? He's like, well, then I'll have a TV show and that'll be a lot of people seeing me. And I'm like, so, then what? And then he's like, well, isn't that how it works? And it's like, no, because eventually you're working the chuckle hut at the end of it. And you have a little plaudit on your handout saying he was, remember that show from 5 years ago? Instead,
wait, Brian, who's booking the chuckle hut right now?
Okay. Yeah. and so likewise, the, you know, for me, the destination was I want to be able to book up the majority of my year with college gigs, and the price to get there was instant legitimacy, so that it that everybody who booked would never be made to feel like a sucker. And so the way to get that was to do a bunch of TV stuff. So I did the TV dance, and I don't regret it, and I think it was great. But it wasn't doing the TV appearances that got me a goddamn thing above working the college market. It was the being successful in the college market that allowed me to build a platform with Scam School. And when Scam School was reaching out and building our own platform, our own crowd, our own people, and we were famous on our own rights because we were doing something that nobody else was doing in all of magic, that is what got the phones to get answered when we pitched what was originally pitched as The Secret Knowledge of Brian Brushwood and eventually became Hacking the System.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, the distinction, because I think, like, you know, like Brian didn't have anywhere near the emotional issues that I have, hard to believe. And so for Brian, who's like, you know, was working at your guy working a desk job, who's like, I want to engage my performer side. I'm going to be more happy performing. And you're willing, you know, you've done street performing, all this. And so you're willing to, like, the idea of being doing college and stuff to you was like, that's great. That to be working professional doing that. And then when you did it, you're like, okay, the landscape has changed. The environment has changed. I have a knowledge set. How can I turn this into content where it doesn't involve me packing everything into a pickup truck and going from point A to point B? And I think that's really the cleverness, is to be able to say, I have this knowledge. People aren't paying to watch magic shows on YouTube. You know, people aren't paying to watch magicians perform on YouTube. And magic gets to be, after a while, you know, repetitious. And you're like, well, what's the value there? I'm like, a lot of people want to learn how to do this. And that's where there's a value. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah. Oh, no. I 100%. And it's difficult to, It's difficult to give any simple advice in a world where everybody has different end games and everybody mm-hmm. is drawn to different aspects. I, for the longest time, for me, it was the idea of 1,000 people clapping for me was just pure ecstasy. It was just like, I couldn't believe that was a thing that's happened. And then, you know, as you start popping out kids and you realize, like, oh, wait, there's a reason people work for money. And because money is more fungible than claps. And so it shifted kind of how I viewed platforms and reaching a lot of people. So I would say, going back in time, if I'm talking to 20-year-old Brian, luckily, there are three conversations to have. One of them I actually was lucky enough to have with myself, which was, at the age of 21, what is it already too late for me to do? It's too late for me to be the world's best violinist. It's too late for me to be the world's best gymnast. It's probably too late for me to be the world's best actor. But magic, all the best magicians I could think of seemed ancient and old. And I realized, well, I might have time to be the world's best magician, right? And of course, you know, over the last 25 years, goals change or whatever. But along the way, the second conversation is, what is nobody doing that you are willing to do? What is the unmet need in the universe that you can fill that nobody else happens to be doing at the moment? And for me, that was when I had the Scam School realization that nobody was doing top quality, high definition, well-produced TV level tutorials, teaching fundamentals of magic in the field bar environment. Right. And then the third question is, to what point, why are you doing this? What is this, a bridge to something else? Is it just for the money? Are you getting ready to turn this into a career hosting openings at used car dealerships? Have that answer. And if you can answer those three things of what can you do, what is it not too late for you to start? What is nobody doing that you want to do, and to what end? That's all you need.
Yeah, and I would say that, and to that point too, say that, like, what I was saying earlier is, like, look at where the money is being made. And that's one of the things that you said, okay, not specifically, not like, ah, the magic tutorial market's hot right now, but you're like, no, you're like, people tune in week after week to watch tutorials to learn how to do stuff. And then you're like, I've got unique knowledge that's battles tested. I've been on the road. I'm out there. I'm not some kid in my basement who's never performed, has no experience trying to tell the world how to be a master magician. You're a legit experienced kind of thing. And I think that was so much the strength, as you came into that being, you're not a guy that's like, I guess I'll teach magic on YouTube. What's your magic experience? I used to go to the magic shop. You know, you have this knowledge. And I think that's the critical thing. As you said, tutorials, instructionals on YouTube are maybe not the way to fabulous wealth, but it is a viable means of providing and making money from content.
Yeah. And luckily I happened to, at that point, 10, 15 years on the road, I knew a thing or two. So I felt reasonably qualified to step into that arena. And I wish I could act as though I knew what that would turn into. Truth is, I didn't. I just knew that nobody's doing this. There's an opening. I'm going to get in this vacuum while it's still there. And then we'll figure out what to do with it later. And what we did with it later was, you know, build a freaking army and spin off, you know, four different verticals off of it, including a television show.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think the two things that I would say is, the idea of living purposefully, like just knowing where you want to go. And the biggest lesson that I would try to tell somebody or myself at the age of 20 is, don't worry if when you get there or the further you get along that road, you don't necessarily love it. Like, there's no penalty to adjusting. There's no penalty to figuring something else out. The biggest North Star that you can figure is increasing your knowledge of the landscape around you and how you make a living at it, while understanding within yourself what you want to do and what makes you happy. And the more, to me, true success, not only from a tactical perspective, but also from an emotional perspective, always comes the more that you have married that. And you really only know that if you are doing something on purpose. And now you know, okay, if I want to do this, this is what this journey looks like. This is what this life looks like. And sometimes you love it and sometimes you don't. But every step forward is a lesson. You just have to know what direction you're going so you can remember whether you like it or not.
You know, one of the things I would have told myself at 20 is that at 30, you're still going to be a young person. At 30, people are going to still look at you as somebody starting out, you know? Yeah. And that's one of the things that was hard for me to get into my head. Cause at 20, you're like, oh, when I hit 30, and then hit 30. And then it's like, Oh wow. People still think I'm on this, you know, I'm a starting out guy. I spent the last 10 years worrying about getting stuff done. And that's true of 40. And it'll probably be true of 50, is that you'll look at, like, you know what, like, people of all ages get stuff done and people move into things and discover things and don't feel like, and I know I started this by saying, oh, if you're 20 year old, but I'm like, even a version of yourself 10 years ago, and that version of yourself 10 years ago could be 50, could be 40, whatever, because, like, a lot can change. And, you know, I'll get into, maybe in another episode, I'll talk about, you know, something I got into a few years ago that I said, I want to get into this space. And now I'm into this space over my head now. These things happen when you say, I don't care. I'm not going to be looking at a calendar and judging myself by my birthdays. I'm going to be judging myself by what I'm accomplishing and what I'm learning to do and where I'm trying to move towards. So it is, so much can happen.
It is such a cliche. There are very few trite cliches that I love as deeply as this one. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. You know, like, it's And the time is going to pass anyway. So if the time's going to pass anyway, then might as well get started, because current you is just time traveled past you, you know?
I get in a lot with like all friends who are talking about like, oh, I have this idea for a story I want to write. And I'm like, yeah, just sit down. I'm like, just sit down, write an outline and just give it a shot. Just run out, write until you find your limitation and then understand what your limitation was and then start again. And then you'll find that, you know, I made a decision one day, I'm going to become a writer, a novelist, and I'd never written anything longer than 30,000 words. And a year later, I'd written 6 novels. And that was just a 12-month span of just, what's that?
I don't know that we've ever really discussed this, but it was a very courageous thing for you to read an article about how there's an emerging market of Kindle bookstores and that people are making it in there. And to have the audacity to just announce, okay, I know me as a cruise ship magician, but I am now a novelist.
Nobody knew me as a cruise ship magician at that point.
But the point is, you know, me as a magic creator. But you know what? I am now a novelist. And then you just started pumping out novels, and it wasn't. I confessed I didn't read the first few, but then one day you're on the Audible store and I'm listening to, you know, a professional audiobook person telling me the story of Angel Killers. And I realized, like, in that gap where if I say eye rolling, that would be rude, but wow, that's very ambitious of my friend, you know, Andrew, to just decide to become a novelist. But then one day you read the book and you're like, this is freaking great. He's really good. And then I'm hearing about TV movie option deals and stuff. I mean, it did not happen overnight. And there was part of me that was like, okay, I guess someone's a novelist now. It's amazing.
Brian, yes, we've heard that story before. Like, I'm going to start writing books. I think the three of us, what we all have in common is we have the most angry, biting critics in our head you can imagine. You know, whatever the world can throw at us, we've got worse, and our subconscious is telling us worse. And I knew that was a thing in the back of my head, is like, well, everybody goes, well, I'm a novelist now. And I'm like, what happened? Somebody says, oh, I'm writing a novel. I'm like, it's boring to say you're writing a novel. Like, what's better? I just finished a novel and I have a new one coming out. That's better. And I said, man, I don't want to be the guy that tells everybody, like, I go through this period, like, I don't want to be a person who tells you what I'm going to do. I want to be telling you something. Oh, I did that. You know, I wanted to be in my rearview mirror because I'm doing something more awesome. And so my goal was, why is it I'm going to write a novel? I'm going to not like, all right. At that time, I'm like, no girlfriend, a lot of free time, you know, manic energy. I'm like, how do I avoid that? I'm like, I'm going to write my ass off. I'm just going to write nonstop and just keep going through every book, learn. Just, I'm going to compress 10 years of experience into a year because I don't want to wait around. And I know everything in life, it gets better. We all got into podcasting around the same time. Brian and Justin are light years ahead of me as just simple performers because, one, the talent, but two, the repetitions, getting in front of the microphones every single day. And if you choose something where you're not sitting down every day trying to make it better, not just going, hey, everybody, look at me, but making it better. If you don't do that, it won't get better. And that's a problem with writers. I said, man, they write a book, they wait for people to, and you see this with big name authors who have a book, like somebody, like a debut author, has this great book come out, and the second book sucks because they spent 5 years working on this. Then everybody told them how awesome it was. Then they sat down to the second one. I'm like, I guess the magic's in the fingertips. Are you right? And then it sucks. And you're like, I guess there's no magic in these fingertips. And now I got to figure something else out.
Two things. The second will be my pick for the episode, which I think you'll like as well. Number one, for me, that moment was the frustration of doing a failed sizzle reel pilot for True TV about a show about scams and cons where I trusted the experts and the experts, none of them knew what they were doing, and we got a very bland whatever. It didn't sit well with me to have that be a failure. So instead, I just announced, you know, what do I have? I've got a bunch of time on the road. I got a couple of $300 digital elf cameras. There's this new platform called podcasting. I have a show now. It's called Brian Brushwood on the Road. What is it? It's me driving and talking with my friend. But to go from nothing to something mattered. And when we later went to pitch, you know, Scam School, it's because we had something to show. But second of all, when you're talking about like Justin and I, made me think of that great line from Arnold Schwarzenegger's autobiography, Total Recall, which is my pick, reps. It's all just reps. How do you develop the Mr. Universe body? Reps. You look at the body and you figure out, oh, wait, these calves need to be a little bit bigger. And then you do reps. How do you act like a robot from the future who knows everything about how to assemble and disassemble a 9mm pistol without even looking at it? Reps. You do it and do it and do it. How do you become governor? You give really bad speeches, figure out what you did wrong, and then give better speeches until finally you're able to correct and you know, lean back and say, yeah, so anyway, that's my illegitimate son. It's reps. It's all just reps.
That's the difference between like, oh, I want a thing towards I want to earn a thing.
Right.
Yeah. And what you realize is that the pathway there is always within your own head. You always just need to figure out where you are on the road and start walking. And, you know, for example, while Andrew has not had the same kind of flight time as Brian and I in podcasting, we've done this show for well over 10 years. And when Andrew was thinking about those first few steps in writing, it was a novella that he knew we could plug that would be exciting to the Weird Things audience. Like, so like this was a place that was the sunshine and rain and soil that like helped nurture at a moment. It made, you know, there was a loop, and then, you know, I did the teaser for it so we could sell it on the show, and that became its own thing. But like, these are all, you don't realize where these things can come together, where these things can start feeding into each other, unless, you know, like Andrew has not had a, you know, the same kind of burning desire that I have to be like a 24/7 podcaster, but his ability to do it and his ability to create this show and create the Weird Things idea and brand, that was instrumental in the very beginning stages, those critical beginning stages of what has now become the dominant revenue generator for him in writing. So it's like, just even if it's not the thing you want to do forever, just purposely walking toward a place and understanding the value of what you've learned is just that to me is the key to life.
That is such, it is such a good point that it's like you, and we'll, like I said, a later episode, I'll get into the what's going on now and how always having a thing to work towards that would build skills puts you into a very interesting position. I've had opportunities come up because I said, I'm interested in this. I have energy for this. I could binge watch this Netflix series that's going to take up 20 hours, or I could go take a Udemy course and learn a skill and do this. Or you work towards a thing, and sometimes you find, a lot of times you sort of find like all these random things just came together. You know, working, doing weird things with you guys gave me a platform when I wrote books to tell everybody, hey, everybody, I got a book. You know, and later things, you know, come from just don't being idle, make things happen. Like Brian said, make things like that is,
yeah,
just, it is, it's how you get hired. It's how you, that's what really smart people look for is what have you made, you know, and Brian got his, you know, his first, you know, deal. I made this thing. And they looked at that and said, if this guy does this without our resources and our expertise, what'll happen when he has our resources and expertise? You know, it's how I got a TV show, you know, is that. So,
yeah. So that's the solution. Just everyone go out and get TV shows. It's easy.
That's it.
Well, oh, there, they're but again, it's that they were the things, they were the thing. I don't know. For me, it was, I don't know what to do. I'll aim for this.
Yeah.
Prior to my, and I did several pilots, you did pilots for Cartoon Network, MTV, that never went anywhere. And, but by the time I finally had my A&E TV series, I already had a publishing deal, you know, that was totally unrelated to it. And it was because along the way you pick up these skills and understanding what's commercial, what sells. And it's like, oh, you got the TV series. Oh, cool. You know, I got this thing going on doing writing books. Well, do you want to do the TV thing now? I'm like, I had to think about it. You know, and then I'm like, stop thinking, do that thing, because you're not gonna, that's not going to come up again. But yeah, like you, the TV was, that was the thing to do because I didn't have any other goals. And then once I got it, that wasn't the goal anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So, picks.
Yeah. Man, I'm trying to think of like a motivational or a biography.
You want me to go for it? What do you think?
Yeah, you go ahead.
I'm going to tell you, like, one of the most motivational things I've seen, and it's been a pick before, it is the behind the scenes of the making of a South Park episode. It's called 6 Days to Air.
Oh, so good. So good.
Yeah. You see Matt and Trey's brilliance. You see the strength. You see a relationship, two clever guys, but you realize one guy is really the hyper creative, but the other guy's like, he can work around it and make things happen in the way they work together. And sometimes being a partnership is like, you do your thing. I'm going to make sure the green room has everything that we're going to want, or I'm going to be there when you need a sounding board, but I don't need to put my voice in everything because what you're doing is great. But when you're unsure of something, come to me. But you watch this, they make an entire South Park episode in 6 days from concept to air. It's called 6 Days to Air because 6 days before they're like, we need to do a show. And I think it illustrates too, like, how lazy and fat a lot of production is.
Well, we're seeing a little bit about in the world where kids, you know, aren't going to school, and we're figuring out that kids only do about 90 minutes of learning a day, and the rest of the time is just daycare and PE or whatever. Like, I think in television production, this is a scathing indictment of like, you don't need that 4 month production schedule.
Yeah.
Well, especially for animation, which is like triple, you know, the time. Normally it's like, you know, we used to joke, listening to the Harmontown podcast, that his favorite thing to say whenever anybody asked him about when Rick and Morty was coming was they're drawing it. You know, there is like this famous kind of lead time there, but not for South Park. They figured out a way to just churn these things out in, you know, oftentimes production wise, like 48 hours.
On the dynamic between those two, I hadn't seen it at the time, but as I'm remembering 6 Days to Air, it feels a lot like the Larry and Artie relationship, where it's like, Larry needs Artie. Artie can't do the show without Larry, you know, but that support role, that as a unit works.
Yeah. The commentator, South Park has very little animation to it. True. Just think of the writing. 6 days to have a broadcast script that is considering to this day, like South Park, like what season are we in South Park?
All of them.
Every season ever.
I mean, that's like, let me see, South Park. I'm going to bring this up because I'm going to make this a very bad point.
Season 23 aired in 2019.
My goodness.
Yeah. South Park is like, you know, older than a lot of people entering the workforce today with college degrees and stuff. I mean, it's been there, and it's still, in my mind, it's still that hip new thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like that Benny Goodman album I love. But but the writing is still 24 years later, a quarter of a century later, fresh writing. I say that's sort of the beauty of you watch 6 Days to Air. Just you watch this process to deliver just, and it makes me angry when you see crappy stuff. And then part of things like when I criticize stuff here, I try to bring up, there's a process. Like somebody may have been brilliant and they went through the studio process. It went through like 3 months of notes and with everybody having the best intention, but at the end of it, it's may not be the best version of what could have been.
Yeah.
So,
all right. What about you, Justin?
I didn't think of anything. Both of those two are great, and you should watch. You should watch and listen to those because they're great picks. I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now.
Justin's pick is the first season of Legion on FX on Hulu. Legion.
Loving it.
Bryce?
Yeah, I don't really have anything in this vein of motivational stuff, but
the second season of Legion on FX.
I'm not really motivated to pick a thing.
6 Days to Air is a good show. It's a good doc. Yeah.
Right on.
Here's something I will say. Here is my actual pick. I have very much fallen in love with my Apple Watch over the past couple weeks because I've been getting into working out a little bit more. But like it as a being able to connect to the AirPods, like not being my phone places, like it has become a consistent part of my life in a way that I was not expecting it to. And it has not up until this point. And I'm actually thinking about getting a newer one just if some of those features work even faster or better than they do on this model. But cool. I very much enjoyed my Apple Watch.
Cool.
I have two sitting in drawers now. They watches. They just don't
still rocking the Pebble time steel.
Yeah. Pebbles. There's a really good YouTube show. I forget if it was Company Man or something like that. Talk about the rise and fall of Pebble and kind of illustrating sort of the problems they had.
I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's worth because it's you know, and illustrate like what made it great, you know, but then what made it difficult. And but anyhow, cool. So that is After Things.
It's been after.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.